Aloha, everyone. This is Erica Duran, and this is episode 19 of the Google Bait podcast. And today we're going to switch gears a little bit. We've been talking a lot about SEO and technology and Google Bait versus lead bait and all kinds of things like that. So today I thought I would do a fun interview with the co-founder of Google Bait, Bill Boren, and we would just talk to him about all things about being an entrepreneur for over 40 years. And I know a lot of entrepreneurs are listening because obviously why would you want good SEO unless you were wanting to be found and sell your goods and services. So I thought this would be a little break from all the technology talk. And since it is based on entrepreneurship ideals and strategies and personal preferences and things like that, I might even throw this up on the Erica Duran Show Unscripted. And in that case, it would be episode 18 on there. So thank you for joining me, Bill. Thanks for agreeing to these questions that aren't related to Google Bait as much or lead bait.
You're welcome. I feel like I'm going to be in trouble, but go ahead.
He doesn't know the questions. So you've been in business in some shape or form for about 40 years now, since you were 20 something. Yeah. Even your first job at Tandy, you had a very, very entrepreneurial type job where you were flying all over the country at 22 years old. So obviously technology has changed over the past 40 years. That's probably the biggest thing, I'm guessing. But is there anything else that sticks out that's just really different now, or something that comes to mind of what's different these days?
Well, besides technology?
Yeah.
That'd
be too easy of an answer.
Well, no, it's true though. I mean, people are so used to their cell phones now, and so used to getting emails on their cell phones, and so used to magically answering questions via Google on their phones and their computers. It's just changed everything. People are different too. People are coming out of school, don't seem like they're educated in a classical education any longer. Society has changed dramatically in the last 30 years or so since the computer's taken over. Everything is different.
Is there anything else as far as entrepreneurs go that sticks out, or is technology just it?
No, well, from an entrepreneurial standpoint, everybody who used to be an entrepreneur was involved in some sort of sales or another, or some sort of manufacturing or another. And that's all changed over the last 30, 40 years also. Instead of manufacturing things in the U.S. and selling things in the U.S. through a wholesale distribution channel, now everything is made in China, and the distribution channel is it's completely different also. When I started, I had a ton of clients who manufactured. I had a ton of clients who imported-exported, but now it's just import-export, and it goes into a distribution warehouse, then it's shipped to a client. So it is very different. Jobs have shifted from manufacturing to almost retail. Everybody's a retailer of some sort or another.
Yeah, and there's thousands of entrepreneurs like us that don't really have a factory or ship anything. So
no.
Yeah. So I guess that, and I guess the way it's just, well, then it goes back to technology again. It's just leveled the playing field that anyone can get an Etsy shop or an eBay account and start being an entrepreneur today, basically.
It's true, though. If you can import something from China and you can basically put it on Amazon, and you can be an instant success selling something you don't make, you don't understand how to make it, and you don't understand how to sell it, just let Amazon do it for you, and all you have to do is just ship it to Amazon and let them sell it.
Right.
So things have really, really changed.
I guess there's no way around it. Technology is the main answer there.
Yeah, technology is really the main answer. And shipping all the jobs to China.
Yeah.
I'm not really that harsh. I'm not trying to be harsh about it. But our government just shipped all our real jobs and all our real technology to China. Mm-hmm. So now everything we have left in the United States is almost retail.
Right. Okay. In my business coaching, a lot of my clients and followers ask me about potential partnerships and if they should enter them. What is your advice on partnerships?
No. How many times have I got into partnership and got really messed over?
Yeah. And my stepfather says the same thing. He just holds up his hands whenever a partnership is mentioned. He's even like always asking me about you. Like, are you okay?
Yeah. No, I can't tell you. Last partner I had, I'd known him for 20 years, and he managed to steal all the money, shut the company down, and really just
and run off with his secretary.
Well, he didn't run off with it; just got her pregnant. And then he denied the child. Hey, that's a whole other story. No, partners is really sounds good because number one, you don't have to pay a partner, and number two, you think they're going to put some money into it and they're really going to work. And what ends up happening is you do all the work, you put in all the money, and the partner ends up stealing everything in the end. So no, partnerships are really, really not good.
And he didn't, Bill didn't have just one bad experience. This has been like a pattern for 30 years. So he's tried it. It's not like he tried it once and he got burned. He's tried it over and over and over again.
I consider, and there could be a whole podcast on my partnership experiences, and I've had a lot of them. They've all, even my uncle, okay, in a partnership, ended up suing me and pasting my name to a contract I never signed. It was just, partners are not good.
So just be cautious, listeners, if you are entering that. Don't rush into it, I guess, is the best advice. Don't rush into it and have very, very, very clear expectations and goals, because partnerships can be good, especially if your skill set is completely opposite.
Nope. I hired an attorney, okay, as a quote partnership in the company. And when the company got up and running, he went down, he stole the money of the account, he put the company name in his business, and he turned around and sued me for stealing my idea. And he was my attorney. So nope. He had a definite different skill set. Okay, he was an attorney. Nope. Okay. Put your name on everything, and don't let anybody else sign a check but you. And make sure you watch that, because I've had secretaries go to the bottom of the stack of checks and pull one out of the bottom, so I never notice it, and go to the bank and start cashing my checks. So no. You only person who signs checks is you. The only person with anything on the accounts and the only thing on the company is you. And just watch it like a hawk, because somebody will steal something.
Yeah, and it's sad that I know we try to keep a positive vibe here, but we also want you guys to know the real truth and the real things that go on. If you're considering being an entrepreneur, you're considering having a partnership, we don't want to sugarcoat anything. And this is real life stuff that happens. And so take
and not just once.
Yeah, just once, over and over and over again. Okay, so Bill, what do you see entrepreneurs doing out there these days that you think is just a complete waste of time or a huge mistake, besides partnerships?
Oh, boy, you're catching me out of the blue on that one. I guess the biggest one I see every single day is people are building, have an idea, they build a website, they go out there and they market the website.
Or not.
Or not. But for whatever reason, they expect the clients are just going to come out of the woodwork.
Right.
They don't research anything. When you build a business, the first thing you need to do is you have to figure out if there's actually a market for it before you put all the time into it. You know this too. You're famous for saying, let's sell something. And you come up with an idea and you start selling it, and then somebody wants to buy it, and you're like, oh, darn, now we got to provide this service. We've got to provide this product.
Yeah, because before I would build something for months and then nobody would buy it. So now I sell it first. Even lead bait. I sold the first lead bait package before the code was done.
Yeah, thank you. But no, that is actually the smartest way to do things. I've had people, I want to create an underwater scooter. It's an underwater where you jump on it, you put on your dive suit, you get on it, and it tows you all over the bottom of the ocean. But it also works good for other things too. And I've got this mechanical know-how. I know what I want, but there's no way for me to build it and test market it and find out there's actually a market out there for this kind of stuff, so I won't do it. I don't have the facilities. I don't have any way to build it.
So even though you have a great idea and a passion for scuba diving, it's still not the best business idea. So your passions don't always have to be part of your business.
Right. Well, the reason it's not a good business idea is because I want it, And just because I think it'd be the coolest thing to have a 4 or 6 hour battery underwater and have all these really cool toys that I can go like in the beach and swim around and go diving. I don't know. The numbers of the research says that every time somebody takes a dive class, once they get tested, once they get their diving certificate, they'll never go diving again. So it doesn't sound like there's a lot of market.
I wonder who did that.
Yeah, but not just you. I can tell you there, when I was diving a lot, there were so many people that were like buying all this stuff. And then once they got their diving certificate, either sat in the closet, or they were selling it because they're not going to do that again. Right. So I think I could actually really make some money on that, but without having a way to build it and test it in a real market, it doesn't make any sense for me to do this. And it's just going to cost me money. And when I get done and all ready to go, chances are nobody's going to buy it. So unless you can have an avenue to customers that are requesting the product or service, it's not really worth it. And the other thing too is that once you start down that path, your market, your customers are going to redefine whatever it is you're doing or whatever it is you're selling. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to have a good client. You're going to have lots of good clients all of a sudden, and they're going to want X, but you might be selling Y. And all of a sudden, you're converting all your resources to selling X because that's the company, that's the business.
I think the other thing to highlight here too is I think sometimes entrepreneurs think there's a lack of good ideas, or they're never going to have another good idea again, so they have to jump on this one. If you just sit back, you have tons and tons of good ideas all day long, and you can't act on all of them. That's the bright, shiny object syndrome that people talk about. Even though you have all these great ideas, you can't act on them and open a business around them in a sustainable, profitable way.
Well, sometimes if you just write all of the ideas that you're having down, and once in a while something will spark, and you might actually find that there's an opportunity to do something you want to do that you can't do today, but you might be able to do it in a year or two just by meeting somebody else somehow or finding whatever it is, whatever being the missing part. Mm-hmm. So that happened a couple of times. I'm not going to get into that, but there's a company that I tried to start, and it evolved into something completely different. And that was because the resources came into play that I didn't have when we started it.
Right. So just have your good ideas, but don't knee-jerk react on them unless all the pieces just come together, and then you have the momentum and the market. Just be careful that you have the market as well.
Well, and then to also realize that even if you have the best idea in the world and you get all the pieces put in play, things could change and put you out of business in a day.
Right. That Thanks, happened to Obama.
Me. Thank you, Obama. That happened to me too.
Okay. So what do you think is the number one trait or behavior for a successful entrepreneur?
Energy and due diligence. Do all the research, get a good, find a cheap attorney, but a good attorney, find a good lawyer, find a good accountant, because the government's going to try to take everything you make. And then just stick to your guns. It takes a lot of energy to be an entrepreneur. I've known so many people who were in different businesses and doing different things. And the ones who made money, the ones who were consistently making money, were the entrepreneurs who were at their place every single day. And they're working the business every single day. The ones who start a business, but see something else going over here, or try to start too many projects. I know this one individual, he's still successful because he has one core manufacturing thing that's never failed him. But every time I talk to him, he's got a new company. Mm-hmm. And it always fails. But the only thing that saves his butt is that he has one core manufacturing thing that's allowed him to survive for the last 20 years. But, if I call him tomorrow, he's got something brand new, I'm sure. And off in a ditch of tent, but he can do this because he has that core manufacturing. But if he was to stop and start over and had to figure out what he wanted to do without anything holding him up, he would have been out of business years ago, several times.
Right. And I'm seeing the other side of that though a little bit. You said research and due diligence. I'm seeing people stay in research mode for 5, 10, 20 years. So I think you have to watch that side of the coin too.
Well, again, things are different now. When I was Yeah, I was younger. I had ins. I tell people sometimes, if you really looked, I've had over 1,000 clients between 1984 and 2006. Mm-hmm. I've had over a thousand different clients that I was consulting in one fashion or another for. And each one of those clients had several people working for them. So I've known thousands and thousands of people. And it's nice to have that kind of input for different things for all these different entrepreneurs with all their different ways of doing things. It's amazing how much I used to say when I used to go to a new client, it was like taking a field trip when I was little. Mm-hmm. I always go to new clients and they show me around, they show me what they're doing and all this really, really cool stuff, machinery and people and all this really nice stuff that I never even knew existed. I don't have that right now.
I think that's a great point though, that there's no one right way to be an entrepreneur. And if you keep following someone's three-step system to launch something, it might not work for you. There's not one right way to do
it. There's one right way. There really is. Find customers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you.
Yeah, because the moment you get a dollar in your pocket, you're an entrepreneur. You did it.
Yeah. I used to know this guy who did door trim. All he did was he had this, it's more complicated than that. But you remember the old cars where they didn't have any plastic around the side of the cars? Mm-hmm. And they just get door dents? Mm-hmm. All this guy did was make door trim. And then I can't remember who it was a car manufacturer, somebody, a big client of his. And the guy went from having nothing, I mean, literally struggling to make all this door trim for trying to sell it at auto parts stores or something. And all of a sudden he had more customers than he could make door trim for. And he went from nothing to making millions overnight because all he did was found one customer that really needed what he was selling. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what happened to him, probably China, but he might still be in business. I don't know. I haven't talked to him in years.
Okay.
But customers are the key. If you can find a customer for whatever it is you're doing or selling, just a solid customer, go for it. And then you've got a business that won't fail. Mine used to be Southern California Gas Company. For 15 years, I did budget and accounting for them, and that was my solid customer for 15 years.
And you did other stuff on the side, but that was your...
That was my bread and butter. I always knew whatever else I was doing, I'd always end up, 4 months out of the year, rate case and such and such, such and such for SoCal Gas. And that was going on for 15 years.
So do you see any strategies or opportunities for modern entrepreneurs that you feel they're just not taking full advantage of? Or
I see everything right now as being moving back into for instance, if you want to start a new company and you want to be this, that, or the other thing, it's like everybody wants to be in Silicon Valley. Everybody wants to get money from Google or whatever. It's just, that's really not an entrepreneur thing.
Amazon?
No, Google Invest Money. That's how Uber got started.
Yeah, I see.
That's who Link. No, wait. Who's the guy with the mustache?
They want Google to invest in.
I've had companies where we've actually gone after money, and back in the day, it was all venture capitalists and whatever, and they wanted so much and everything else. Nowadays, there's all these investment companies like Google and like Amazon and like Kickstarter. Plus, you've got a lot of other avenues that they go for. You can go out and get. So, it's just different.
So you're saying that modern entrepreneurs aren't taking advantage of the venture capitalist opportunities or the Kickstarter like opportunities?
Well, it still goes back to what I said a minute ago. If you've got an idea and you've got a customer like Uber, no offense, but to me Uber was the dumbest idea I'd ever heard. There's so many taxi companies out there and they're heavily regulated by the state or the county or the city. How in the heck is Uber going to be?
They showed you though, didn't they?
Yeah, the guy who started Uber was just lucky or smart. He figured out if you put a number on a vehicle and called it a limousine, you could pick up people and take them where they wanted to go, and the taxi companies and everybody else had no say in it. They couldn't do anything about it. That's how Uber got its start. And then the guy was also smart enough that he took it to Google, and Google said, yeah, we'll give you $25 million for this. And now look what Uber's done. They've completely run a lot of the taxi companies out of business. But I thought Uber was stupid because I never saw, I didn't understand how they could make it.
There's just too many taxi companies and then the regulations in New York and all that.
I don't remember if the numbers are right, but it seems like it cost a taxi guy, what do they call them? Emblem taxis or whatever it is. It costs like $1 million a year to run a taxi in New York. And that's not because it costs $1 million a year to drive a car around. It's because of all the taxi authorities and all the money you have to do this, that, and the other thing. It costs a taxi driver like $1 million a year to run a taxi. So they never make the car stop. They run it 24/7, and most of the money they make goes back to the city. Well, how in the heck is Uber getting around that? Mm-hmm. They don't pay the city anything. So why would the city of New York let Uber into New York? And the answer is because they didn't have a choice. The laws were there. They let limos into New York. Uber runs under the limo laws, and now Uber's in New York. Right. And the taxi authorities are going, even the one for Orange County is out of business. The Orange County taxi authorities belly up because the taxi companies don't have enough or are not making enough money to pay the taxi authorities.
Yeah, so I guess keep your eyes open and also think outside the box. And my favorite, ask forgiveness rather than permission. They had to think outside. just do it and ask for forgiveness later.
Yeah, I've done that a couple times too.
Yeah, so what time-saving, productivity-focused types of practices do you do, or what do you – is there any tips?
Time-saving – well, let's see. I guess the basic ones. May comes in once a week. I don't do my own laundry. It's 5 minutes down the road. I do cook, but when I want something like not vegetables or whatever, I just go out because it's going to cost me more time and revenue than
and
to make it.
And mental space to make it. Yeah. And then you kind of wear the same, like me, you kind of wear the same clothes every day. Same, basically like a uniform. Mine's a Tommy Bahama dress and yours is like khaki shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah. It's funny. I haven't worn a pair of long pants in a year.
Any other time? You in particular, I know for a fact, don't check your email very regularly.
No, so. I do not.
So that's a tip there. And you're absolutely not on any social media at all.
No.
Because you just leverage other people's social media.
No, I'm old school. If somebody wants to talk to me, they can damn well call me.
Yeah.
And if I don't pick up the phone, leave me a message because you're interrupting my time and my time is important to me. If I get on a project, if I'm doing something and you interrupt me and all of a sudden I go back to it an hour later after a phone call, sometimes it's really hard for me to figure out where I was in code or where I was, what I was doing.
Yeah. Now, the studies say you lose, I think it's 20%. You have to redo or to amp back up.
So if somebody calls me and I'm busy, I don't answer the call. If somebody emails me and I don't even leave my email up, there used to be a button that said, you got an email. And I don't care about that. I killed it. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I mean, I just figured, I know it's funny, but I just figured out the other day, my phone keeps beeping and it beeps every so often. It's like, okay, I've got a message from Facebook. I go into the Facebook app. It's like, I don't know how to get the messages. I just found the other day that, oh, look, there's a button that says Facebook Messenger. And I have, how many unanswered messages? Okay, remove that app.
But are any of them, none of them are important?
They're all just social media of people either trying to contact me for one reason or another. It's me, it's, like I said, I don't need to be on social media. I've got enough interruptions. Right. Do you remember, what was that? Back in the day, there used to be a text, the very first text messenger.
MSN.
Was it MSN?
MSN and Yahoo had a messengers.
Maybe it was MSN or Yahoo.
And AOL did too, I think.
Oh, it was AOL Instant Messenger. That's right.
Yeah.
I could get into work every day and 5 minutes after 8, I had 20 people saying, good morning, Bill. Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Bill. And I would sit there and try to answer all these people. And I was like an hour into every day was answering instant messengers. People trying to be friendly. I appreciate that. They've got a job. They get paid for not being productive. I have to actually be productive to stay, you know, to keep money coming in. So after a while, I just deleted everything.
Right.
So I know that people like to be social. And I do too. But outside of work, if you want to be social, let's go have a drink.
Well, they're wasting their time too, messaging you. Well, they're probably trying to kiss your ass because you're the boss.
No, this was just my clients.
Oh, your clients.
This was people who work for my clients or people that I knew that for whatever reason, when they got to work and their computers came up, the little instant messenger would come up. They see my name and go, "Oh, hi, Bill. How are you? What are you doing today?" Okay. Mm-hmm. Go away. I'm not trying to be antisocial.
Yeah. And then when you really have to focus, sometimes you put an audiobook on or music on, but you're not really listening to it. You're just drowning out the other noise or thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't work in complete silence. So I either turn the radio, I either turn whatever that radio app is I have.
AccuRadio.
AccuRadio. I like that, by the way. Or I turn on a book, but the problem with turning on a book, if I'm into the book, I can't work. And even if I'm into the book and I'm working, sometimes I'll go through two or three chapters, and I have to go back because I haven't heard a word they say.
Yeah.
So.
And I think another thing that might, I don't know if it's fully helping with your focus or all, but you really are a minimalist now. You only have, just like me, all I own can fit in my Jeep. Everything you own can fit in your car too.
Yes, and I keep finding that I keep throwing stuff out that I don't use anymore.
Yeah, you don't have to maintain anything. We don't spend hours dusting. We don't spend hours rearranging things in our pantries. Like none of that stuff.
Oh, I got one that's a huge time saver. I don't ever, ever, ever go shopping.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that. So because you're researching what you want to buy and comparison shopping, and then you're shopping, and then you're bringing it home and trying to find a place for it, then you're maintaining it, then you're maintaining your credit card bills because you spent, like, it's just a never-ending cycle.
Just the act of going to a mall.
Right.
I absolutely hate malls. I think this is the worst thing in the world. You can get the closest parking space to the mall, and the store is always on the other side.
Yeah.
And once you get through the store, there's always 50,000 things that you don't need. And everybody's advertising. I hate going shopping. Christmas for me is the worst time of the year because if I don't know what you want, I can't buy it online. I guess you're not getting a present.
Yeah,
I won't go shopping.
So house cleaning, laundry service, wearing somewhat of a uniform, and meal prep if you are, or just going out and chalking it up to, I save time from food shopping and cooking and worrying about it. So yeah, those are pretty, you guys hear this all the time, the same like four or five tips, but they do save just hours, literally hours a day.
And it keeps your focus on whatever you need to do. If you're always being distracted by,
or having to make decisions, that's a bigger thing. Having to decide what to wear, decide what to eat, decide should I clean today or not.
Even when I had my big company and I had to wear the suits and the ties and the $1,000, you know, the $1,000 apparel, the shoes and everything else, it was still pretty much everything got washed at the dry cleaners. Everything was stacked up. I knew when I got to a certain point in my laundry, I had to take the stuff to the dry cleaners or else I have to go shopping. So even then I was still wearing a uniform.
Right. Okay. This next question is kind of an ouch one. Are you ready?
No, go for it.
Okay. You've made millions. You've lost millions. What are you doing differently with Google lead bait to avoid or prevent business mistakes of the past? Oh, it wasn't supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be, ouch.
Well, first of all, Google bait is nothing like some of the stuff in the past. Google bait is more mainstream and it's not a big revolutionary, I mean, it is kind of revolutionary, but it's not this big revolutionary thing. I once had a company called Point to Point Communication that was doing broadband before cable modems and DSL modems, things like that. And it was really, really revolutionary. The idea that you could stream video and get, you know, internet to your house at, you know, 3 megabits per second or whatever. This is all before anybody had this stuff. And it was very revolutionary. Those kind of projects are highly risky because even if you think you know what you're doing, one thing will set you back because you don't really know what you're doing.
Right.
The last company
it's never
I had
been done before.
Yeah, it's never been done before. And if I would have made it, I'd be worth billions. Unfortunately, I won't tell you exactly what happened with that.
That's probably a partnership.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
But Google Bait is, it's just a better mousetrap. It's not reinventing an entire industry.
It's not reinventing an entire industry.
It's just a better version.
What happens with Google Bait, well, let's back up. What happened with the entire industry is, years ago, everything used to be HTML and it was coding. And then suddenly, WordPress, suddenly all the Jumbalaya or whatever the hell it's called.
Jumbla.
Drupal and
Squarespace, and then, GoDaddy,
these all, you know, it's like put your ideas in a toaster and pops up a website, which is fine, except that the ones, the sites that seem to do the best, the sites that are the most efficient. And Google seems to give real precedence to sites that are efficient. You know, you do all your work. WordPress will never get you there. It might if you're a unique industry like Uber, but for the most part, the WordPress sites are never going to get you there. So that's why Google Bait came along, because it complements your WordPress sites. You don't have to give me $100,000 to rework your site and recreate everything in a non-WordPress environment. We're taking Google Baits and we're complementing your WordPress site, or complementing your Squarespace site or your Jumbalaya site. I know I say it wrong. But it's different. It was just a neat idea, and it's meant to complement your current venture instead of trying to reinvent the wheel. So that's the idea behind Google Bait.
Right. And it's, again, it's not completely changing a whole industry like you tried to do with mortgage audits and such.
Yeah, we're not trying to invent a new wheel. I'm just trying to, Google Bait is a new wheel. Nobody else, as far as I know, is doing this, but it's still based on solid facts. Google likes this, Google likes that. If you can get past the scoring, if you can get 100% on this and that, which we've done, then Google will rank your pages better. So that's all we're doing is we're ranking the pages better. We're going through all of the SEO stuff that's necessary to get your page seen on Google indexes. That we never get you to the top, because ultimately nobody can guarantee we can get you to the top. But we're probably one of the better bets out there to get you at least a good place on Google search engines.
Right. Okay. Anything else? Anything you're avoiding this time around?
Oh, that was it. That's all the questions?
I have one more.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, but is there anything else on that last question? Any other big mistakes that you're trying to avoid this time around, Google Bait?
You want to say the partner?
Well, the partner thing, and then it's not a new industry. We're just building a better mousetrap. And anything, I'm trying to think.
Well,
we're having a bigger, instead of building a huge team of employees, we're leaning on technology and automation instead of hiring people.
Yeah, that's another thing. I forgot about that. When I was first doing the computer stuff, I started doing computers about 1979. What was it? IBM Card Punch, if any of you are old enough to remember that.
Or if you've seen Hidden Figures, they have a card punch in it.
Yeah, same idea. So as I was growing up and getting more and more involved in computers, nobody knew anything about computers. And what would happen is I got so big so fast. I started out with just pretty much me, brought on my first partner, problems with him, brought on two more partners, really problems with them. And as time goes down, as I'm going down this road, I keep finding that I got more customers and time to handle everything. So I would hire people. And of course, nobody knows anything. So I'd start training people. And then as soon as I train people and then I'd introduce them to my customers and they would start working with my customers, they'd quit, start their own company, take my customers with them. So the moral of that story is if you don't want people walking away with your ideas and your really whatever your magic, whatever your magic stuff is, don't let them have it, because people are really they will. So with Google Bait, I don't hire anybody to do this stuff. It's just me right now.
And therefore we had to build the form and automate things so you wouldn't be working nonstop 24/7.
Yeah, nobody, well, some people appreciate, but if you actually saw what I do and you have to sit there and create an HTML and PHP and JavaScript, all the stuff on every single page, and it just takes time. So I've automated a lot of that now. I've got some really cool stuff that nobody's ever seen yet that automates about 90% of the work. So all I'm having to do now is tweak a page instead of having to write the entire page.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm going down this path, I'm getting better and better at this stuff. But I won't let anybody see it. I'm not going to let anybody see what I'm doing or how I'm doing it. At some point in time, I'll probably hire somebody to do some of the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't let anybody get into the passwords of the computers. I don't let anybody see what I'm actually doing. Because I'm not necessarily I'm afraid they're going to steal everything. Because if anybody is really good at this stuff, all they have to do is take the idea and they could run off with it. But at least they're going to have to create it, which has been a lot of the work. I won't let anybody just walk off with it. It's all pretty protected.
Well, in the past, what we've seen is people stealing your idea or our idea and selling the idea, but not actually doing the work behind it.
Yeah, that's happened a couple of times.
Yeah. So then that gives the whole industry a bad name when that happens.
Well, yeah. I don't want to say people are just... I don't want to make a general description about people, but when it comes to money, people aren't particularly honest. If somebody's got a chance to make a lot of money screwing somebody else over, they'll do it almost every time.
Yeah. And it's sad, but again, we're not trying to sugarcoat anything.
No, don't let anybody get close to your checking account. Don't let anybody else get your credit cards. Don't let anybody get your code or whatever it is your secret sauce is, because they will walk off. They will start their own company. And if they get the chance, they'll steal from you, no matter how long you've known this person, no matter how much you trust them.
Yeah. I mean, not harping back on the partnership thing, but you have people that were practically, you know, best friend brothers to you that after 20 years of being not a good partner, but a decent partner just turned. So.
Well, yeah, the last one was one of my very best friends. I knew his wife, I knew his kids, I knew his family. I used to be at his house on Thanksgiving, and there's a long list of things that we did together for years. I mean, literally 20 years. And then one day he decides that he wants to steal all the money and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, we're not really friends anymore, obviously.
Yeah, that's just a shame, though. But anyways, how can we end this on a higher note? That there's just so many opportunities out there right now, and I wouldn't stay in research mode long. I'd get a customer as quick as possible and focus on revenue generating activities. I think to sum this up on a higher note would be that's the point. When you're an entrepreneur, when you make your first dollar, congratulations, you're an entrepreneur.
Let's work on this on a higher note.
Yeah.
You remember that guy named Bill Gates?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He never created anything that was his idea. Never. Not one single thing that was his idea. His original quote, big deal, was BASIC on a Model 1 and an Apple computer, okay, which was 100% based on DEC, which is gone now, their business BASIC. So he took their BASIC and he rewrote it for two other computers, made a lot of money. Then the operating system, Windows, was based on a Unix program that was written by AT&T. Word was based on three other Word programs. Excel was based on VisiCalc, which was based on the original – shit, I can't remember the name of it. Sorry. I can't remember the name of the original program now. But Microsoft never had an original idea. They took and waited for somebody to come up with something, and then they just did it differently, did it better, and they were better at business than they were.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really not the worst way to do things. If you see something that is like Uber, and you decide that this is a really good idea, how in the world could they do that? And you start another company like Lyft, and you're basically going to do it better than Uber, and then you take the same idea to Google, and Google gives you another $20 million because they don't want to be in trouble with their other $25 million investment to create Lyft. Now you're in business and you've got a great company. So it's not always a bad thing to be second when you come to the market on something. If you watch somebody actually come up with something and watch their struggles, watch them make all the mistakes, and you walk in there and basically just try to one-up it, you could be the next Microsoft. So that's not a bad way to do business. Not necessarily the best, not necessarily the most, I'm missing the word here. Bill Gates always made money.
But it's not the most glorious way.
Well, but his point is that you make money by any means necessary, because otherwise you shouldn't be in business. If you're not in business to make money, then go sell shoes, go work for somebody else. But if you're not in business to make money, then you need to go to somewhere else and do something else.
Or get a job, basically.
Yeah, get a job.
Or if you're not willing to market, too, I think that's something we keep seeing over and over and over again, is people just they want their magic WordPress website to work, and they don't want to market, or they're scared to reach out to people or pitch people. So that's a lot of what we're doing every day, is helping people get better at selling, get better at marketing, and get a little boost and help by having Google Bait pages do some of that for you.
Well, one other thing is that we're doing everything right now online, which is completely different than what it was 20 years ago. Everything used to be hands-on, you know, face-to-face meetings, lunches.
Flying across country.
Yeah, flying across country. Don't miss that. But now everything is done online, and it's so almost impersonable now. You don't really get to know anybody that you're working with, really. I've had clients I've known since like 1985, and they're still alive.
I never heard people say it like
that. Well, they're like 80 years old now.
Oh, I see.
Actually, one of them is actually over 80 years old now.
Uh-huh.
So I've had clients that I've had for 35 years, and I still talk to them. But the online presence, the online people, and stuff like that, I have a feeling I'll never see that again. Well, I won't live that long. But the point is, you don't grow that friendly with people online. Especially me, because I don't do social media.
Yeah, I think that's what you're missing, because you could stay connected to people even longer now through social media, but that initial personal having a drink after work or flying to see someone doesn't happen as often.
No. And right now it's because I'm just busy all the time, but I shouldn't be that busy all the time. That's a weird thing. This Google Gate was a nice, perfect little business where I'd come down here to Mexico and go fishing, go scuba diving, maybe get some parasailing in, and it feels like all I do is work.
Yeah, but well, that's from launching it and building it, and then trying to build the lead bait platform too that wasn't in the plan a year ago. So that's part. Well, let's wrap this up here. Since you're not on social media or anything, how do you want people to reach out to you if they want to talk with you about an upcoming project, or just want to, you know, reach out and chat?
I would suggest they call you. I don't mean to be rude, but because I don't leave my stuff.
Yeah.
Up.
So if you guys have seen that Facebook movie, The Social Network, and then Justin Timberlake's always like, don't bother him. He's dialed in. That's kind of what it's like.
It
he's
is.
Coding. It's just like that movie. And yeah, it is like talking to an escalator too. I believe that was a line in the movie.
Even if it's not coding. Okay. I mean, I'm creating images, or I'm pasting images, or I'm looking for it seems like it's never ending. And for you to get a hold of me without a scheduled conversation, have a conversation with me, I'm not trying to be rude, but it's most of the time, most conversations end in, okay, thank you very much. Maybe I'll help you. Maybe I won't, or maybe we'll do
something.
Well,
I think the best, if they want to connect with you, the platform that you pay a little bit more attention to is LinkedIn. So they could friend you on LinkedIn.
Nope.
I see you mentioning that sometimes. So I don't get the messages.
I haven't gone to LinkedIn in a month.
Okay.
And I've got people.
All right, people. Well, then just email aloha@ericaduran.co and just tell us what you know, when and how and why you want to connect with Bill, and we'll give you the best route.
we'll set up a time to call. We'll talk to you. Be happy to talk to anybody about almost anything, but it's got to be on my time.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So again, just email aloha@ericaduran.co. We have our concierge team and myself manning that email. So it will definitely get answered. And if you want more information on Googlebait, it's googlebait.com. Leadbait is leadbait.co. Any other connections? I don't think that you have any other websites or anything, right?
Oh, I got lots of websites, but none you can catch me on.
All right. Well, I do
websites for not just, I do websites for not just Googlebait, not just Linkbait, and not just for ericaduran.co, blog.ericaduran.co. Yeah, I do actually work on other people's websites as well as Googlebait, Leadbait. So I can give you a list of people I work with, but that doesn't do me any good.
Yeah. Well, if you just want a good laugh, go look at Bill's LinkedIn profile because it has like 40 years of different jobs and industries. And Java's sneezing now. So if you hear that, it's Java sneezing.
Well, I've told people this other thing too, that if you took everybody that I've worked on since the 70s, and I had to write a job description for everything I've ever done, it wouldn't be a resume, it'd be a book.
Right.
Because
maybe you should do that.
Yeah, but nobody cares.
If you guys want to see Bill write a book, email aloha@ericaduran.co.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy. Let's see. How many crazy women have I been with? How many weird customers? How many different things have we got? How many companies I've started and the reasons that they failed? I mean, yeah, the book would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Except it'd bring up too many memories.
All right. Let's wrap this up. Thank you so much for answering our questions and taking a little break from being totally technology-based and answering some general entrepreneur questions. Mahalo for listening and aloha.